Good afternoon, everybody. It's WMFO. I am Mike on the mic. How are you, everybody? I'm here at our usual, not the usual time. This is kind of weird for me. I'm used to saying good morning because it's usually Saturday at 9 a.m. But it ain't me now. And you guys, I don't know if you have mics yet. Yeah, you do. You're on 3 and you're on 4. So I can magically do this. And hi, you guys.
Good afternoon.
All right. Good afternoon. I know. Weird.
Friday drive time. Everyone's stuck in traffic, so they have to listen to us.
All right, don't tell anybody, but I'm pulling up my socks here.
Yeah, I'm not looking. I am not looking.
Okay. My knee is not touching yours, is it?
No.
Okay.
No, thank God. But yeah, this is great. Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
Usually, it's always Saturday morning for you.
It is pretty much.
Sometimes for us.
Yeah. So I am, I'm Mike on the mic, and I've got my guests. I always like to say the brothers Hurwitz, but they're actually father and son.
Yes.
Yeah, this is Mark Hurwitz right over there.
Good afternoon, everybody.
And Les Hurwitz, his dad.
And I'm father of the son.
You are.
Les.
Yeah, but less is more. Oh, I'm sorry I said that.
Here we go.
Oh, boy.
I didn't mean to say
that. It begins. It all begins.
Yeah, so today we're going to be here for 2 hours. I've got some free form and some new noise to play. We'll get Les on the air, probably about 25, half past the hour, with a great introduction to an excellent artist that we don't know about, but we will. I won't give him any hints. Maybe we will. What do you think?
That's up to you. You're the boss.
Okay. And Mark, you're going to give us a couple of restaurant reviews, maybe some industry news.
Yeah, there's actually some really big industry news that just came out. So, yeah, pretty incredible stuff that's going on. You know, usually you think the summertime things are slow, but last couple weeks it's been insane with news. So, and then, of course, we'll be doing some new noise, 5 songs.
I know, you're stealing my shtick.
I am. You can sue me if you want. I got a good lawyer.
No, I'm Jewish. We don't sue anybody.
Oh, that's right.
All right, so yeah, Mark will do some reviews and some new news and a whole 5-song set of new noise, actually.
Yep. All right, looking forward to it.
All right, let me start the first set off here with some new noise. I had a request and new noise. How good is that?
I bet I know who it's from, too.
You might be wrong, but if you want to say, go ahead.
I'm going to guess Michael Costa. How's it going, Michael, if you're out there?
He's coming up after you finish in the second hour.
Okay.
Our friend Martin Bono gets the first new noise.
Okay, great.
He requested something from the brand new record by Cheap Trick.
Oh, this is really good. Yeah, I've heard this.
It's called We're All Right, and he wanted to hear Radio Lover. So, brand new right here, new noise at WMFO. This is Cheap Trick. Enjoy, everybody.
Thank you.
addiction. Oh, how it hardens and it numbs. The rest of me is a version of mine built to collapse and crumb. And if I hadn't come now to the coast to disappear, I may have died in the landslide of rocks and hopes and fear. So I swim until you can't see land. Swim until you can't see land. Swim until you can't see land. Are you a man and you a bag of sand? Swim until you can't see land. Swim until you can't see land. Swim until you can't see land. Are you a man and you a bag of sand?
Storm Radio, WMFO, Medford.
Have mercy on my ears, will you?
Afternoon here at WMFO Medford. How you doing? I'm Mike on the mic, along with Mark Horowitz and Les Horowitz. How are you guys doing?
Hello.
Not doing too bad. Got the tunes cranking already for everyone stuck out there in traffic, heading up north to wherever, Maine.
It is weird for us to be here during drive time, isn't it?
I know. We're the only people not stuck in traffic right now.
Yeah, we might be the only people listening to us, too.
That's a distinct possibility.
It might be.
Let's hope.
We don't know what this time of day is
no,
like.
No, let's not hope.
All right, let me tell you what we played in that first set of the day. The new noise was a request from Martin Bono from the brand new Cheap Trick, which is called We're All Right. That was Radio Lover. Glass Animals up after that from a recent CD of theirs called How to Be a Human Being. I've got to pay attention to that. Marking that down in my notes here. That was called Youth. And then we had Frightened Rabbit from 2010's The Winter of Mixed Drinks CD. That was Swim Until You Can't See Land, or You Can't See Anything if you have a lot of mixed drinks, I suppose. I'm very verbose today.
You are?
Yep. After.
Hey, you know, even a broken clock is right twice. No, that's a different cliche.
Yeah. Well, you've got the cliches going. After that was a band called The Weeks. From the Comeback Cadillac CD that was called Buttons, and finished off with some local music from a great young band called Lily Black. This was a couple years ago, I think like 2015, the Forgot to Mention CD. That was the title track.
Good stuff.
And really good stuff. And they're back with a new album now that we're all playing here too at WMFO.
A lot of good music out.
Yep, we try to play, you know, some of it once in a great while.
Sure, we'll new noise trademark, right?
That's right, TM.
That's right.
All right, so as I said, our friends Les and Mark are here, and we'll hear from Mark probably just after the top of the hour, 5 o'clock. But right now, hey Les, you're up.
Well, perhaps I may be down and out for the count, but
I don't think you are.
We'll give it a try at any rate.
All right.
For those of you who don't know who I am or what I am, I have taught history and music part of the time, like 27 years, I spent at Longy teaching composition and active pianists as well, teaching piano and the language of music. And I did some pioneering work at high school level by doing nothing but college level work there. So I love to lace whatever music I present by pointing out the historical connections surrounding the music. And it gives the music a little more life. For instance, today, I'd like to speak about someone some of you will know about somewhat, but far less than another name. Now, the two names I'm going to be talking about, but I will center around a man by the name of Oscar Levant. That's L-E-V-A-N-T. Some of you may know who he was. Obviously, the other name, George Gershwin, everybody knows. We hear Rhapsody in Blue, and the whole world knows George Gershwin. What is interesting about Oscar Levant is that both he and Gershwin were close friends. And Levant sort of preferred to live in the shadow of Gershwin. At least that's what we think. We're not really sure. But Levant emerged after 1937, after Gershwin died, we find out everything about this man. He was a giant unto his own being. Let's go back to Gershwin, though. We know his music, but the giant he was is something I think I ought to talk to you about a little bit. Here's a man who, as a boy of 15, dropped out of school and started beating around. This is Gershwin now, beating around in the publishing companies and became staff pianists for many of the publishing companies there, and became relatively well-recognized as someone with an special kind of talent. Now, to make a long story relatively short, Gershwin, at age 19 now, decided to write a tune, which he wrote, we think, in about 10 minutes. That song is called Swanee. Swanee. L. Jolson made it famous. L. Jolson loved the music and befriended the young Gershwin. What occurs as a result is that Swanee took the music world by storm, and within days, certainly weeks, no more than weeks, George Gershwin at age 19 became one of the most powerful composers in terms of popularity in the world. Let's see, 2 million recordings were sold, 1 million copies of the music were sold, that is round figures, but just to show you the radiation of popularism that this young man developed. And he became such a powerful writer in such a short time that he found himself in a quandary with himself. He became famous and knew almost nothing about the art that he could give. And he started looking around for people, great teachers, composers primarily, to learn from. At age 20 or 21, Gershwin sought out Igor Stravinsky, who was one of the great composers of that time, arguably the greatest living composer. And this young man approached Stravinsky in Stravinsky's office. At that time, Stravinsky was in New York. For what reason, I'm not sure. And Gershwin approached him and asked if he would could become one of the students of Igor Stravinsky. And Stravinsky, without looking up, he was at his desk, asked a question. How much money do you have in your bank? And Gershwin asked, sir? And Stravinsky said, I repeat, how much money do you have in your bank? Gershwin really was not ready for that kind of a question, and simply gave him a round figure, because he really didn't know himself what he had in the bank. And Stravinsky, after a few seconds, looked up at him and said, uh-uh. I am not going to teach you. It is I who should study with you. And so Gershwin discovered that kind of popularity created a problem. He then went to Maurice Ravel. Ravel is well known primarily for the Bolero, which we have all heard. Now, Ravel was also a very famous composer. But Ravel turned Gershwin down immediately by saying, it is better for you to be to remain a first-rate Gershwin than a second-rate Ravel, so I'm going to leave you alone. No one is going to touch you. And that's exactly what happened. Gershwin was primarily a composer who had to become pretty much self-educated. He had piano lessons, and he did some study with some of the lesser composers of the time. But for the most part, for the few years he had in his career, he sought to improve himself by looking for someone who could actually teach him something about the art that he had such a special language in. Here's an example, and then I'll go over to Oscar Levant. 1924, Rhapsody in Blue was introduced. It changed the entire history of the world. We have fusion from that point on. The fusing of the classics with jazz. Now, that's what the Rhapsody in Blue was all about. And, of course, we know Gershwin through that involvement. During this period, he befriended Oscar Levant, who was bumming around in New York and playing piano and writing some reviews and stuff like that for the Broadway stage, mostly off-Broadway. Became very close friends. Tragically, let me give you some dates. Gershwin was born in 1898, died in 1937. In his 38th year, within weeks of the discovery, he was killed by a very rapidly growing malignant tumor in his brain. And he left us at age 38. I like to call Gershwin the American Mozart, because here we have Mozart, obviously, at age 30, well, just going into his 36th year, leaving a stamp of foreverness. And Gershwin doing the same thing in our country. At age 38, he left such a legacy, an indestructible legacy, hundreds of tunes, and Porgy and Bess, which is arguably the greatest folk opera ever written by an American. So they were very close friends. And when Gershwin died, Levant was totally devastated and never was the same person. He became a kind of an unhappy wanderer. He kept trying to find himself. Actually, history points out that he did indeed find himself. He championed the music, the piano music of Gershwin, and was the one person in the world who played Gershwin's music wherever he went. And fortunately, some recordings were left of Levant playing Gershwin. Levant actually has recorded, I think, everything that Gershwin has written for the piano, had written for the piano. And you can get to hear Oscar Levant, who became ultimately a world-class pianist. No question about it. We're going to hear some of the music that he wrote, but I must tell you that this man wore many robes, many overcoats, one of which was humor. It's hard to believe that not only was Levant one of the world's better-known pianists, but he actually became one of America's great humorists. And very few people today know of the humor of this man. He was sort of a Mark Twain of the 20th century with a sharp edge. He was rather acerbic, very arrogant, not very easy to get along with, and very restless. I think part of it was the fact that within himself, he competed against Gershwin, whom he loved. But Gershwin had that unmistakable greatness as a composer, and also was a good pianist. But Levant got to deal unselfishly with the music of Gershwin by championing it, and helped the world get to know the piano music of George Gershwin. But I must tell you, some of the quotes that Oscar Levant made, many of them are written into two books. Listen to the titles of these two books. One by Oscar Levant is called A Smattering of Ignorance. The other is called, and get this for a title, how do you like this one? Memoirs of an Amnesiac. Now, how does an amnesiac write a memoir? So, obviously, this man was loaded with a kind of derisive humor. And I have a list here. I never use notes when I lecture or do anything of the sort. But I thought I'd write out a list and pick from this list of quotes some of my favorites. For instance, he once said, "I knew Doris Day when she was a virgin." Now, I'd heard different analogies of that with different words, and that set me to, well, what did he actually say? He did say that, but he said other things too. He actually thought about that statement and finessed it. And here is what I think a pearl of twisted humor. Quote, "I knew Doris Day before she became a virgin." No, try to sit down and figure that one out. That's great humor, I think. He had great problems with his own mentality and became a drug addict. That is Oscar Levant. And as a humorist, he said, let's see, today is my yellow pill day, tomorrow is my white pill day, and Saturday is my red pill day. And he spoke in that kind of derisive nature about himself. One time he actually said, there is a very fine line between genius and insanity, and I totally destroyed that line. At another time, he said, I erased that line. Someone asked him at one time, what do you do for exercise? And his retort was, well, I sometimes stumble and fall into a coma. So that was his form of exercise. He had a definition of a politician. He said, a politician is one who will double-cross that bridge when he gets to it, which I think tells us more about the invaluable nature of the word politician. It never seems to change. Another was this. He said, what this world needs are more geniuses with humility. There are so few of us. How do you like that one? I mean, he was a great humorist. Let's see. Let me choose one or two more. He said, schizophrenia has its merits. You never dine alone. Which I think is really great. There were three that he mentioned that I can remember, by the way, speaking of musicians. He called George, Georgie. And one time he said, hey, Georgie, if you were to live all over again, start all over again, would you continue to fall in love with yourself as you do? So that's number one. Number two, he said, to George, once asked, after he became famous so quickly, he said, do you think that my music will be heard 100 years from now? And Oscar, without any hesitation, said, yeah, if you're still around. So that tells you what he thought very much about his situation with music. The music aspect, he said, let me tell you one more. Leonard Bernstein had just become famous. By the way, let's talk about timelines. Bernstein became quite famous shortly thereafter. Levant died in 1962. Shortly before that, he said, and this was actually in the New York Times, he said, I think a lot of Lenny Bernstein, but not as much as he does. So this is the brand of humor that Oscar Levant had. And I must tell you, if you really want to enjoy yourself, look for the two books, The Memoirs of an Amnesiac and A Smattering of Ignorance. They're brilliant. I mean, they go right along with some of the great humor written during that particular time. There was one humorist by the name of H. Allen Smith, who was a terrific humorist, who wrote Low Man on a Totem Pole. And he thought the world of Oscar Levant as a humorist. Levant also had an IQ that ran off the charts. There was a radio program that my mother, father, and I listened to when I was a child called Information Please. And there was an intellectual by the name of Clifton Fadiman who ran the program. It was on once a week, I think on Sundays, asking questions that almost no one could answer. And Levant was invited to be on the panel, and he could answer questions stemming from anything from, say, 16th century Indian poetry to astrology to astronomy to physics, you name it. And he was almost never squelched in terms of an answer. He was amazing as an intellectual. Enough said about this incredibly interesting guy. Now let's hear some of his piano playing. Oh, he was a first-rate pianist. By the way, I must tell you that Vladimir Horowitz, the great Vladimir Horowitz, got to like Oscar Levant. He got to meet him, and they got to be close friends. And Levant himself is a world-class pianist, but he was not a world-class classical pianist. He played wonderful jazz, and he did play great classical music. Technically, he was world-class. I have a photograph, obviously staged by Oscar Levant. It shows Vladimir Horowitz front, looking straight at the camera, sitting squarely in the middle of a piano bench. So obviously he commanded that piano bench. So there's some sort of metaphor there. On the right side of the bench, hanging and dangling, sitting precariously by his rear end on the very edge of the bench, looking very forlorn with his cheek in his hands, was Oscar Levant looking straight down to the floor. So that tells us what Levant thought of his place as a pianist. Horvitz was the chief. He also mentioned that Horvitz taught him, Levant, how best to cancel a recital and at the last moment. He said no one knew better than Horvitz how to cancel a recital at the last moment. Or actually, Horvitz almost never did, but Levant almost always did. So a very interesting man. We're going to hear a very small number, only three short pieces, by George Gershwin, as played by Oscar Levant. This was recorded in 1936, probably. 1938. These are the three preludes for piano by George Gershwin, as played by Oscar Levant. Thank you. There you are. By the way, Gershwin could play his own music. He was a very fine pianist, but not a virtuoso. He played almost nothing but jazz. Levant is different. He has done some recordings not only of Gershwin, actually all of the Gershwin's music for piano, but also recorded several, made several recordings of classical music too. I don't think he aspired to become a classical pianist. He simply wanted to be a really good pianist, which he was. Now, what you're going to hear are two, these are relatively rare recordings, both by the composer Chopin, the 19th century romanticist. And they're both etudes. An etude, of course, French, meaning study, is an evaluation on the part of a composer to write music dealing with some of the physical aspects based upon the, you know, the physicality of the techniques that can go into the piano, piano playing, and that sort of thing. Composers such as Chopin spent a lot of time writing etudes. He wrote many etudes, two of which you're going to hear now. The first one is one in C-sharp minor by Chopin. This is Oscar Levant playing Chopin. Gives you an idea of what a world-class tech, you need to have a world-class technique in order to master something like that and play it so that it sounds relatively easy. Levant was absolutely incredible. By the way, he made several movies. He was in a bunch of movies, one of which, let's see, what was that called? Humoresque is probably one of the better movies he was in. He, of course, had such a style in terms of the way he described things, that he was one of the few who were allowed by the scriptwriters to write his own lines surrounding his own character, whatever the movie was. I mean, that doesn't happen very often, but he did have that kind of trademark. And what you just heard shows that, hey, one of the reasons probably Vladimir Horowitz got to like him, because he probably thought, hey, this guy's a pretty fine pianist. Now, let's hear the other one. By the way, the next one, the last one we're going to hear, is called the Black Key Etude. Chopin decided to use all of the black keys on the piano. Almost all of the notes in the etude are on the black keys. Here's Oscar Levant playing this particular piece. Thank you. How's that for a jazz pianist playing Chopin? You very rarely come across someone playing that well who's primarily a jazz pianist. I've thought more than once about the question, was this a precedent, however indirect, possibly, of the ongoing fusion that comes along later on? Did, for instance, a man like George Shearing, who died just a few years ago, who was such a master of fusion, using the classics and pop or jazz together as effectively as he did, was he affected somehow by the combine of an Oscar Levin? Or how about another pop pianist, lesser known, Don Shirley? I don't know if you've ever heard him, but he was also a master of the fusion of both phases of music. But as far as I'm concerned, no one played the piano better dealing in fusion than Oscar Levin. So I'll leave you now by hoping that you enjoyed it almost as much as I enjoyed telling you about him.
Thank you, Les. It was terrific to hear, as always.
Thank you.
I loved it. And the universe loved it, too, because it's not pouring out. You've affected the weather.
Oh, my goodness. Well, all I can say is, okay, so I was all wet out to begin with.
All right. Yep, and as you know, I dabble in the piano. I did it. And that was me, actually, on piano. I was playing. Why are you laughing? What?
Well, master of disguise. I'm laughing at myself. I always do.
Oh, good. I laugh at you, too. Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
You're more than welcome, Mike.
All right, so it's WMFO. It's coming up on 4:53 in the afternoon of Friday, June 16th. How you doing? Mike on the mic here with Les and Mark Hurwitz. We just heard a segment from Les, and we're about to move over to the other Hurwitz, which is Mark. And Mark, you're going to do some restaurant reviews?
A couple of reviews, but before that, there's so much news. It's just,
all right. Well,
like I said, a couple of crazy weeks.
We're going to come right to that right after this PSA. How's that sound?
Hey, sounds good.
All right. Talk to you on the other side.
Confessions of a potentially. Kids.org.
I might look like an adult, like a person who could possibly be a parent, but I have no idea how to talk like one. And everyone knows that if you want to be a parent, you have to sound good when you say things like, "Don't make me turn this car around," or "Because I said so," or "Don't make me come back there." I don't even really know what those things mean, but I know that I actually believed my parents when they said them to me. How did they manage to sound so convincing? Here we go. "Don't make me come back there." Oh, no, that's not tough enough at all. Kids can sense weakness. "Don't make me come back there." Ooh, yeah, that's better. In fact, that kind of sounded like my dad.
Weird. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to listen to you practice your dad voice. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
WMFO Medford, you wanted me to do that, didn't you? It's not the top of the hour yet, but it is WMFO in Medford.
Well, it's legal now.
Tufts University.
All right. So Mark is the founder and curator and all-around good guy at Boston's Hidden Restaurants, a site for hidden restaurant reviews. You also have a blog on Boston Restaurant Talk, which is more about the industry and that kind of thing. And you're going to give us a little taste of both today.
Yeah, the blog was pretty much, that was it the last couple of weeks. There was so much news. I don't know where to begin, really. I guess I'll start with some really big closures. Blue Ginger, Ming Tsai's place in Wellesley, shut down, gone, never coming back. So that's a really big, I mean, that's an award-winning restaurant. It's all gone. He's moving on to another concept. It's going to be a stir-fry, like a casual stir-fry concept.
No, I look forward to his next thing.
Yeah, I mean, everything he does is great. And the stir-fry concept, it sounds like he really wants to get into a little more casual stuff, you know, not so formal. And Blue Ginger wasn't a formal place, but it was definitely higher end. So he's moving on, and definitely good luck to Ming, one of the good guys in Boston restaurant scene. Another place that closed down was 7 Star Street Bistro in Roslindale, which, you know, a lot of people probably haven't heard of it, but some people considered it maybe one of the best, if not the best, Chinese restaurants in Boston. Asian street food. They were also the first restaurant in Boston to get to be allowed to do BYOB. So that was a big deal because up until this point, if you didn't have a liquor license, people couldn't bring in alcohol, and they were the first to be allowed. But anyways, they shut down, and we're not entirely sure what the owner's going to be doing now, but it was a really big closing, too. Sunset Grill, which you know about, right?
Made me cry when I read it.
Sunset Grill has gone bankrupt. Ugh. They're still open, but they're gone. They went bankrupt, and they owe a lot of money, and we're not sure what's going to happen with them. I hope they stay open.
I hope they stay open.
Personally, one of my favorite places for nachos and beer. It's just a terrific place. But right now, nobody really knows what's going to happen to them. Should I keep going with bad news?
It's your specialty.
Okay. Bad news is my middle name. So maybe we won't do that. Maybe we'll get a little good news here. You know Zingerman's Deli?
I don't, but I love the name.
Okay, Zingerman's is out of Michigan. You know Zingerman's. Ann Arbor, Michigan. Famous specialty food market. They do everything. They, you know, cheese, sandwiches, pantry items, just special ingredients. Well, there's a place coming to Brookline, Coolidge Corner, Brookline, called Allium Market. And one of the people from Zingerman's is opening this place, and she's modeling Allium Market after Zingerman's to an extent. So it's going to be a market where you can get, you know, your olive oil, you can get your spices, et cetera, et cetera. It's going to be a cheese shop where you can get cheese from around the country and also around the world. And there's going to be a little cafe where you can get mostly lighter fare, small plates, maybe sandwiches, coffee. And again, it's modeled after Zingerman's, which Zingerman's is a pretty famous place. So that's some pretty good news coming. Back to the bad news.
Oh, great.
Just for a minute or two. So I think people know this already, but Lanes and Games, the bowling alley in Cambridge, is shutting down. And we don't know exactly when it's shutting down, but it's going to be soon. And I heard it could be sometime this month, but we haven't gotten confirmation on that. But that's been around forever. And, yeah, people are pretty upset about that. I used to go there all the time. Some good news. Victoria's Diner is, the owners are taking over Charlie's Sandwich Shop, which is a famous sandwich shop in the South End. They've been around long time, and they closed a while back. No one knew why, and now we hear that the owners of Victoria's Diner in Roxbury are going to take it over, so it's fairly good news. And finally, you ever hear the halal guys in New York?
Yeah.
Food carts and restaurants. Yes, it's chicken and rice.
Yeah.
They're coming to Boston.
Oh, that's great.
So we're going to be going there.
That's great. Well, wow, that really helped me recover from the thought of cheese sandwiches. But anyway.
Oh, sure. Hey, well, for those who don't know, the halal guys are pretty famous in New York, and they're from Egypt.
Mm.
And they open these carts and restaurants, and they do chicken and rice. They do falafel, hummus, you name it. Baklava, I think baklava. Mm. And they're coming to, what's that building? It's a transportation building in the theater district.
Yeah.
I think it's called City Place, which, there's a little area in the transportation building that has some little food shops, and it's going to be in there. And I don't know exactly when they're opening, but it should be pretty soon.
Maybe in the fall? Well, before
it
that?
It might be before that. I'll have to check. I think it might be this summer. Oh, it could even be next month.
I want to go immediately.
Okay, so we'll be going there. Yeah. So now to the reviews. A couple quick reviews, because we're almost, well,
it's 5 p.m.
Yep. We got an hour to go, so.